The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody. This is Bob, and I've got Charles with me. Charles is actually out of the office. That's why you can't see his smiling face. He is traveling today, and we also have Matt at the controls. Eddie is out of town this week, so I got recruited to fill in for him, so hopefully we'll get through some of these questions and go over a couple hot topics that we got in and cover a couple other things as far as processes and operations and upcoming events. So we've got a pretty good slate of questions here, and I see people are still dialing in and jumping on the call. So Matt, if you will pull up the information we have for question number one and who that came from, let's get started.
All right, so I'll pull up Kevin real quick, see if he's made it onto the call yet. And I don't know, Kevin has no mic anywhere near him, so I'm not sure what's going on with that. So I'll go ahead and pull it up.
Well, before we get started, I'd just like everybody on the call to know that today is Kevin's birthday. So, Kevin, although you can probably hear us, you might not be able to say anything to us. We all wish you a happy birthday.
That's right. Happy birthday, Kevin.
All right, Matt, what was it? You fill in for Kevin. Tell us what the question is.
Actually, I now have him with a mic, and he is unmuted. He should be good to go.
Hey, Kevin, how are you? You there, Kevin?
Sorry, yep, here I am.
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
All right. Doing good. Happy birthday.
Thank you much.
All right, let's talk about your deal a little bit more, Kevin. I know we talked about this a few weeks ago or last week, and so you want to just give us a brief, let's run through the scenario one more time and then talk a little bit about it.
Yep, so basically the house needs about $20,000 in repair to get to what would be a considered financeable condition. I have listed it on all the various rental websites through Postlets, Craigslist and all that stuff, basically with a seller, well, rent-to-own type ad, seller financing basically. Get a lot of interest in that, but not a lot of people that actually have the down payment, or I've never had anyone actually apply to it. Anyway, the reason I brought it up today is because now I'm starting to get close to some critical dates on taxes, and I'm wondering, should I just go ahead and pay those now? Should I hold off? I'm just not sure what I should do, because this property, the BPO would say that it's worth about $18,000 as is, and if I paid the taxes, I'd probably be around $11,000 into it. And I'm just not sure kind of what my, how I'm going to be able to sell it, if I'm just going to stick with the seller financing and just needs to be, you know, listed long enough to find the right buyer. The other thing I did do is Kevin shot me a quick email back when I sent this in to you guys and recommended contacting auction.com. And I just talked to them this morning, and I'm I am going to be listing it with those guys as well. Just don't know if I'm going to actually find a buyer for it or not there. So that's kind of the rundown, and mainly the question today is, if you guys on this asset, would you go ahead and just pay those taxes as they are right now? I think that the redemption date, I think, is August, so I don't, at this point, it's basically either pay them and just look for a buyer and stick with it, or walk away altogether, but I really would like to avoid that, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you've got $7,500 invested in it. I wouldn't really want to walk away. But the property, is it habitable in its current condition, or is it going to have some work done before it can be rent ready?
I would not consider it rent ready. You know, one of the bathrooms is almost destroyed. The kitchen is really shabby. It's the type of thing where if someone was really motivated to move in, and they had no other option, and this is the only way they're going to buy a house, and they had a handyman that was going to do it for some, you know, beer and a pizza or whatever, they could probably live there, not that comfortably right away, but you'd want to get some initial plumbing work done. And this one has a foundation issue as well. You know, whether or not you consider that habitable, I'm sure someone could live there. People were up until they got ran out of there, but it's going to need some good work until I consider it rent ready myself.
Right. Okay.
So right now you're in at about 7,500.
Yeah, after everything that I put into purchase, marketing, all that other stuff.
And the tax amount is another, was it five on there? Is that what it's?
Yeah, 5,396.
Okay.
All right. And so those can do. And you have to redeem those by August, correct? They've already gone to a tax sale, correct? Or they go to a tax sale in August?
I think they go to a tax sale in August.
And then what's the redemption period?
So I believe that the August date is the end of the redemption period for the first taxes that were sold, if I'm understanding correctly.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So could you redeem just the 2011 taxes? Or do you have to redeem all of them?
I guess that's a. I don't know the exact answer to that. I would assume I could with just 2011. I think it states on here somewhere that you have to pay in full, but I'm sure that they're just trying to get paid in full.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. So I don't know what exactly that means when they say it requires it. If that means they're just going to reject the partial payment, just let it go to let the redemption period expire, or if I have to pay in full, but. I've just been keeping a close eye on that that date, and I'd want to get a payment in the mail this week to avoid any complications.
All right. Well, I saw you had a quick sale value of $12,000. Do you really think you could sell it today for $12,000?
I think so.
All right. So let's look at it from both angles. You're into $7,500. You can get $12,000, so you'll make $4,500. All right. Or you can go ahead and spend another $5,000, and then you have to spend more money to fix it up, and then you're going to be able to sell it for more. I mean, your initial question is, what would we do if we own the asset? We would probably sell it as is.
Okay.
Just because our model isn't really to, you know, rehab it and fix it up when you're looking at something that's going to cost us $20,000. Now, if we had to fix it up for $4,000 or $5,000, then, you know, that may be a different story and still be able to sell it for in the 30s. But Charles, don't you think if we own the asset, we wouldn't put out another $5,000, which is almost, you know, 2/3 of what you already got in it. We would just rather go ahead and make, you know, $4,000 on $7,000 and be done with it, and that's a pretty good return.
Yeah. That's, if we could sell it for $12,000, Kevin, that's what we would do. And just take it and go.
Being a little bit more realistic, I just don't have a buyer in mind or anything, so I don't know if I could sell it. I mean, would you guys sell it as is and then just let them know there's this redemption period expiring very quickly and you need to pay those taxes, or would you potentially pay those and then just try to sell it for 15 type of thing?
Well, I mean, I tried to sell it as is, but, you know, I would get the redemption date, so is the redemption like August 31st or 30th? Or is it like August 1st?
I think it's the 1st, if it's or closer to that, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it said August 3rd on that.
So you're running out of time here. I mean, you could list it real quick on a Craigslist or an auction.com, you know, but you've really only got about a week before you really need to get get those taxes paid. I mean, you could try to discount and sell it. If not, pay the taxes and just bump it up the tax amount.
Yeah.
You could do that, but it's hard. You know, it's gonna be a quick sell since you've got.
Charles, are you there? All right. Well, like I said at the top of the show, Charles is traveling. He's actually in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. So for those of you that have been to Mississippi, you know they have to work really hard to get that internet to work down there. So hopefully he'll dial right back in here. Kevin, you still on?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay. So do we kind of answer your question? It's kind of if you can go ahead and flip it now and make $4,000 or $5,000, you know, if you could reach out to some area rehabbers. I know it's in Cook County, Illinois. I know they're a little tight to work with sometimes, so I don't know how much flexibility you may have on the redemption amount. I know they say full amount and all that, but I don't know, like you said, if they just want to get some money, it could be an option. If you do decide to pay the taxes, I definitely would at least see if you could get by with just paying the partial amount that's going to redemption on the 3rd, to see if you could at least lower your – all they can do is say no, right?
Yeah.
So instead of just mailing them the full check, I'd at least call and see if you could do that. So hopefully that answered all your questions.
Yeah, that's helpful. I think that I'm going to find out the exact answer to that. And honestly, I probably will just pay the full amount if they absolutely require it. And then just like you guys are talking about, I'll just do a quick sale. I'm probably not going to focus on the seller financing as much as I had been, and maybe just mark it up by the amount I pay. Because any savvy investor, they're going to add those taxes into their cost of business anyway. And so to me, unless you're just dealing with somebody who's not even looking at taxes, it's almost a trade-off. Either I'm paying them or you are, and it's getting marked up or down either way.
Right. All right, that was a good update. We appreciate it.
All right, cool. Thanks for the help.
Yeah. We'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Sorry about that. I'm back.
Oh, you just bailed on me to see how we finished that part of the call.
I couldn't even hear you, so. Just lost my phone connection, but I'm back.
All right, so what's number two we got on the list here, Matt?
Well, we did have a couple of questions that were pertaining to this. I don't know if you saw those or if you wanted to just move.
I guess I'm probably out of practice on how to actually maneuver around this thing. So,
Beth asked a question. She was saying, as far as the down payment option, what would be the upside or downside of waiving the down payment because the borrower is going to be doing the repairs? So the sweat equity would be the down payment of it.
Well, the downside is he gets in there and it's way more than he thought it was, and he decides it's not worth it and he bails on it. Or he tears it up and makes it worse than it is. The upside is he really knows what he's doing and he, you know, fixes it up and he does create some equity in the property. Me personally, if I own the asset, I would require some skin in the game down payment wise, in addition to him doing the repairs. So, you know, you may hypothetically, if you were going to ask $5,000, you may only take $2,000 and give him credit for working off the other three. But I wouldn't just stick somebody in there and hope they can fix it up. Charles, you got a different opinion on that? You've got
I agree. I mean, you definitely want to try to get a little skin in the game, but you know, but you definitely want somebody that knows what they're doing. Other thing is, if somebody does that, they move in the house, or, you know, if they're buying it to move in the house, they're going to have some cash to be able to do the repairs as well. So you really want to screen those applicants, you know, to make sure that, you know, that they've got a cash flow or they've got some savings that they're going to be able to spend to do that, to actually do the repairs.
Good point.
And, And Alan was asking, if either way that you were to do this, would the buyer more than likely require that the taxes be current whenever they're purchasing the asset?
They probably would, because that's a big chunk of money that they're going to have to come out of their pocket, that $5,300. So they probably would require, you know, they probably would require the taxes to be paid. So you definitely probably want to list it higher than the $12,000 because you want to recoup that. Because if they're going in there to repair it, put sweat equity in the property, and they're going to go there and do the repairs themselves, you know, they're going to have to come out of their pocket $5,400 for taxes and then another several thousand for repairs. So that's a pretty good chunk. So it might be easier to pay those taxes and then just up that price a little, Kevin.
And I'm going to unmute Kevin for this one, because Rick asked, in the previous situation, he was saying that he actually needed the property tax notice in order to pay the taxes. So he was wanting to know if this was that actual property, and if so, how did you obtain the tax notice?
And my assistant contacted the county, which takes a lot of patience, as we all know with Cook County. We just had to do a formal request for, I can't remember what the term was, but that we just did a formal request to the county, mailed it in, and it took them like 3 weeks to mail us back the payoff amount. Does that answer the question?
I believe so. All right. Thanks, Kevin. And Beth has a situation, I believe, just like this, so she wanted to kind of, I guess, talk to it and maybe talk through it with you guys. So let me pull her up real quick. I have to do some juggling here. Beth, I've got you on your mute. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, I don't. My situation isn't a tax situation. It's in outside Knoxville, Tennessee, and it's a decent little house. But you know, the last tenants didn't leave it in that great a shape, or the last owners, and it does need work. And I've been trying to sell it on a land contract, and I've been getting a few bites on it. But the people, you know, are struggling to come up with the $12,000 or whatever to do the repairs, you know, and come up with a down payment. And I agree with what you said. I believe it was a couple calls ago that I heard somebody say it was reasonable to not take a down payment but to accept the repairs. But yeah, I have the same concerns that you talked about, that they move in there and or they sign something and then nothing happens or whatever, and they do seem to sort of balk when I send them a 1006 that I partially fill out with them over the phone and then email it to them. You know, they sort of seem to quit calling and go dark a little, and I don't know, the situation with Kevin's is really kind of opening up my eyes that maybe I shouldn't even try this, that maybe I should, you know, sell it as is to a rehabber.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't really want to repair them, I mean, if you can sell it as is, that's, and make a little return off of it, it's worth shooting for that. I mean, we sell the majority of our properties as is. I mean, you know, we sell assets every day as is. Very few of these will repair. Some we may go on a repair because it may fail, could be a different, bigger return. But majority of ours we sell as is. And,
okay.
And we have had people that have gone in there and they purchased the assets and we sell it for handsome and, you know, with minimal down, and they've gone in there and actually they've done the repairs. So, you know, it's all about screening the borrower, you know, kind of see what their cash flow is, you know, what they have in savings, you know, because if you're looking, if it's a house that needs $10,000-$12,000 repairs, you've got to make sure they've got a cash reserve there that they can do that. That's kind of your first clue whether they're really going to repair it or not, if they got the cash to do it or not.
Yeah, yeah, I hear what you're saying. How, if I decide to sell it as is, how do you reach out to the local rehabbers? The RIA has been unresponsive. RIA.
You can always put a sign in the yard, or I'm sure there's some social media sites that you can post on. I know Kevin listed some stuff as far as renting it. I don't remember exactly what they were, Craigslist, Postlet, and something else. So there's some marketing that you can do that way. You know, if somebody is a true rehabber, he's a fix and flip guy, and he's struggling to find inventory, then, you know, this could be right up his alley, right? You got a deal, you'll sell it to him as is, and you know, that's what he does for a living. If it's, you know, if it's somebody, you got 10 assets and 9 of them are notes and 1 of them is REO and you don't really want to get into fix and flip business, then I would sell it as is to one of the rehabbers.
Okay.
And I don't know if you have a database already of some of your contacts, but I would just put a little information, maybe a picture of the house on there and say, hey, I'm looking for a rehabber in this area. If anybody knows anybody, I'd go to the Note School forum and I'd put it on there and I'd say, hey, where'd you say this house was?
Outside Knoxville, Loudoun.
Okay, you say Knoxville, Tennessee?
Yeah.
Yeah, say, you know, hey, anybody knows anybody in Knoxville, Tennessee, I can tell you right now. I don't know if he's on the call today, but Jim Fleming lives in Tennessee. I don't know how close to Knoxville he lives, but Jim, pretty well-connected guy. Don't see him on the call today, but you can put out there on the forum, and you know, he may know somebody. I know Jim used to be in the fix and flip business. He may be interested in or know somebody that is. So work in your network and work in your connections. Everybody out there should have their own database of contacts, but you also have the whole Note School family, you know, mentor students, and with the new forum that we've got up and running now, and that's the kind of stuff you need to post. Hey, I've got an REO in Knoxville, and I really need some help. If you know any rehabbers there, you know, let me know, and stuff like that. So that's something that you might want to try.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, Matt, what do we got?
Sorry, I was on mute.
Did we lose Matt?
No, I was just talking away and then realized I was on mute. So we have a few questions that Kevin, Charles, kind of relating
yep.
to the boarding and through FCI and, or this one is through FCI. But anyway, so I don't know if Brian is on. He is not. So
okay. Let's go down to the questions and I'll kind of just. We talked about this last night, and there were some questions here, and I wanted to talk a little bit through this. So, Brian was trying to board a loan, or is in the process of boarding a loan with FCI, and so they come back with a lot of questions, okay? And they've addressed these. They want Brian to address these questions. So the first one was, we need the borrower's information, such as Social Security, their home phone number, their work phone number, their email. Okay, so the information is, all the information to the new servicer will be provided by the current servicer, which would be our servicer in this case. If your servicer pushes back, and if you have the information from the collateral file, that's fine. But basically, when the servicing transfer takes place, there's majority of this information is information that's on the tape or the data tape that will come from one servicer to the new servicer. So, I mean, if you have the information in the collateral file, that's fine. But some of this you're not going to have in the collateral file. The next question was current servicer's loan inventory number. So, the servicer is going to transfer the loan inventory number, meaning we're assuming it meant the loan number. Is what they were requesting. So the servicer is going to transfer the loan number that they have on file, which is will be the same number if you purchase the asset from Colonial. It's one of our loan numbers. But when you transfer that to a new servicer, in most cases, they're going to assign it a new loan number. So if in this case, FCI is going to assign it an FCI loan number. But the loan number that they're requesting here, again, is going to be on the transfer data tape when they send that information over to FCI from our servicer. A person's name, direct phone number, and email for the current servicer's contact person. Most of the servicers that you guys are using out there, they've dealt with our servicer multiple times. This is not the first time they've dealt with Clear Springs. And so we provide that boarding information. Clear Springs will reach out to your servicer, no matter who it is, if it's Peak or Madison, or FCI, our servicer is going to contact them and open the communication up. So, and if they don't, if there is a problem where the servicers are not responding, then feel free to shoot me an email and we'll find out why they're not responding. But again, these are generic questions that FCI sends back, and I've seen these questions many times from students.
Yeah, Charles, let me just interject here just real quick. As Charles said, a lot of this is handled in the service and transfer as a standard operating procedure between the current servicer and the new servicer. So I don't know exactly where in the process Brian is, and he may have jumped the gun because he may have contacted FCI before the Clear Springs contacted him. So he's getting a big laundry list of things, and he's not aware that the servicer is going to provide 99% of these. So as we've gone over it at various PowerPoints and Summer Summit, there's a 30 to 45 day lag that it takes for servicing transfers and to get loans boarded and who sends the goodbye letter and that. So it's good to be aware of the information one servicer needs to provide to the other, but you need to rely on the current servicer providing the majority of that. And then if there's any holes to fill in, you could go back to who you bought the loan from, whether it was Colonial or some other seller, and you can fill it in. Because the information as far as how to contact the person, what their social is, all that information is in the servicing file.
And here's a question here on number 7 where it says the new servicer says the goodbye letter needs to be sent to them before it goes to the borrower. For loans purchased from Colonial, is this something Colonial does as a standard procedure? So let's talk about that. Your goodbye letter comes from the service group. It doesn't come from Colonial. And again, these service groups have transferred loans between each other many times, so they know to send the goodbye letter over for approval. So our service group would in fact send the goodbye letter over and get an approval from FCI in this case, and FCI said yes, it's good, and then our servicer would send that out. So you need to push back to your servicers. If your servicers are actually asking you for this information, you need to go back and say you need to contact ClearSprings. You know, they're the servicing, they're the servicers transferring it. They have the data. They have the goodbye letter, and FCI should reach back out to the servicer. Again, this is not this is something they do every day. It's transfer loans. So there's really no reason that your servicer is pushing back for information from you, because you know, and just in case, unless the servicer by chance did have a piece of it, but in most cases, the servicers have all this information because they've been servicing the loan.
Correct. All right, so Charles, while we're on this topic, I wanted to interject something here. Sometimes we've told people in class that you know, you don't have to use a third-party servicer. You know, if you want to manage the assets yourself, and while you know legally that may or may not be the way to go these days, I just want everybody to be crystal clear that Colonial has made a management decision that if you buy an asset from Colonial, any of our funds that we happen to have, you must use a licensed servicer to board your loan with. Okay, so we're only going to sell them if somebody's going to board it with a servicer. We've done in-depth research into some compliance issues, and in order to protect us and our fund investors, we're going to sell loans and have them boarded with a servicer. What you do after they're boarded with a servicer, you own the loan, and that's totally up to you. But from a servicing transfer position, we do not want to assume any liability of selling that asset to somebody who's not using a licensed servicer upon servicing transfer. So I just wanted that to be crystal clear. Charles, you got anything to add to that?
No, and again, Bob, you pretty well covered it, but just from a liability standpoint, we need to make sure as managers of the fund that, you know, the loans are being boarded with third-party servicer and that the rest of the guidelines are being followed. And we know by using third-party servicing companies, they're following the RESPA, because again, it is liability for everyone if you're not following the RESPA time frames. And as Bob and I are managers of these funds, we just have to make sure that the RESPA guidelines are being followed.
All right, Matt, what's next on the list?
Well, Charles, I have a question for Charles. Rick asked. That is, it's kind of going back, circling back to the fifth there about the new creditor truth in lending license number. Can you kind of touch on that as far as, because he was saying that's something the old servicer wouldn't have. When is that needed? What would they need it for, and how would they get that?
And again, they're going to have to get that from the servicer. You know, the new creditor truth in lending license number, I've never had anyone request that number from me. And I'll be certain, and I'll be honest, I'm not even sure what the truth in lending license number is. And I'm sure it's a number that is provided by two servicers, that the licensed servicers that they have to provide. So that is definitely a piece of information that you have to get, that your servicer would need to get from the current servicer.
Yeah, I'm sure that this list came from a cookie cutter application that the servicer has and just fires off on any kind of servicing transfer. That could pertain to a loan that was bank originated and it's, you know, has certain TILA or truth in lending requirements and so forth. So again, I would just push back to the servicer.
In the last few weeks, I've seen the same question several times, and so. And as Bob stated earlier, you're interviewing your servicer and you're asking them what they need. These could be questions they send you of information that they need. But when you buy that asset and you're getting ready to service transfer, these you need to push these back to your servicer to get from the current servicer. Because in most cases, in the, when this servicing transfer starts, you're not going to have a lot of this data right up front anyways, because you're not going to have a collateral file yet, and the servicer has all this information. So just have your servicer, that's what you're paying them for, have your servicer push back and request this from the current servicer.
All right, so next up is navigating the trade desk. And I know last night on the call, we went through a long PowerPoint presentation on this. I'm not going to go back through that, but that is on the member site. So if you want to go back and look, which covers everywhere from how to request assets to review all the way through how to get a loan boarded. Matt, that is on the member site. Can you tell everybody where that is?
So I have it on the member site under the content at this point. And if you think it needs to go somewhere else, let me know. But if you go to the webinar that's on today, it's up there right now. And so basically all the stuff we're going through right now is already up. So it's under the today's webinar. You just go to company doc or call docs. And if you'll give me a second, I can pull it over to the what we have up here. But
yeah, and we'll probably have that moved or duplicated as well on other parts of the site under resources and training and where we keep some of that webinar videos that you can go back to and learn. Matt, I trust that you have it up there, so we'll go from there. If somebody can't find it, just let us know and we'll help you out. But just to be clear, we're having a little bit of an issue with some folks not knowing exactly where to email, who to email on certain things. So I wanted to take just a few minutes to kind of walk through exactly how everything's done. So at the beginning of every month, on the first Thursday of the month, we have what we call Titanium Thursday. And that's when we release new assets that hadn't been seen before to our Titanium students to have first look at them. The following Wednesday, they're unveiled to the rest of the mentor students as well. And then at various times, we also have other offerings through the website. We recently had a special offering last Tuesday on an REO portfolio, and that should be up and available to everybody on the member site as well. But at any time, as we've talked about since the Summer Summit and on various calls, anytime you want to see assets, you just email tradedesk@colonialfundinggroup.com. Okay, so anytime you want to see assets, and our trade desk activity is growing leaps and bounds. I mean, we get emails all the time. Hey, send me what new assets you have. Send me new assets. Okay, we have Michelle Winberry and Tim Sieblink, who are Titanium students that have been around this space for quite a while now. They're helping on the trade desk. They're there to answer any questions that you have as you're going through your due diligence process. However, the key point is, remember, Tim and Michelle are helping us man the trade desk. They're not Colonial employees from 9 to 5 every day or 24/7, because we get emails at all hours of the night, believe me. So even if you're dealing with Michelle, always copy trade desk, because we have our internal staff, myself, Charles, some other folks that monitor that. And if I see you're not getting a response, I'll jump in there and make sure you do. That's requesting assets that you want to take a look at. When you want to make an offer on there, and just so everybody knows, every tape that you see is going to have three levels of pricing. It'll have titanium pricing. If you're a titanium student, that's what you pay. It'll have mentor pricing. If you're a mentor student, that's what you'll pay, and it'll have a non-mentor price. That means if it's somebody who's not a mentor student or somebody who is a big money platinum and they want to buy a performing asset, they don't classify as a mentor student on that because they're not a diamond, so to speak. So anyway, when you want to make an offer, that goes to offerings at ColonialFundingGroup.com, not the trade desk, okay? Because the offering is where we know somebody wants to buy that, and we take it out of inventory so that somebody else doesn't get a chance to bid on it, all right? And again, even if at that point you'll be dealing with Angie or Charles or myself, you still copy the offering group, so if somebody's out of the office, we can make sure you get the agreement you need, the information, the wiring instructions, etc. Okay? Now, one thing we're running into that I want to clarify for everybody is we're getting emails to the offering, and when you want to make an offer on an asset, which basically means you want to pay the price that's listed, is you're supposed to send the account number, that property address, because sometimes there's a typo in the number. And if you just put 41185 and you meant 41184, and we don't have the address to cross-check, we might have you marked down for the wrong asset. So we require the asset ID number, the property address, and the price. Now, we're getting emails right now, and all the email says is 41185 still available? Well, I don't know if that means you want to buy it or not. So I'll reply, yes, it is available, and then that person is either doing their due diligence or they're on vacation, so they don't reply for 3 days. And then during that time, somebody else made a bid on it and bought it. So if you want an asset, you put in your email that your intent to purchase that particular asset along with those information, the ID number, the address, and the purchase price. And we will get back to you and say, I'm sorry, that asset's no longer available. Another student has an offer in on it. And then you know not to go any further. But just random emails asking if loans are available is causing a delay in us knowing if you want to buy it, and two, assets being bought by another student when somebody may have an interest in it. So hopefully that help clarifies that piece. One other thing that we've run into a couple times is we own assets in several different entities. We manage two capital funds, several family funds. We also have loans that are owned individually and by Colonial Funding Group. When you buy a loan this month from Colonial Impact Fund 2, next month you may buy it from Colonial Fund 17. So everybody has different wiring instructions. So follow the instructions closely. Pay attention, okay? And don't jump the gun. We had a student who just thought he should mail a check to Colonial Funding Group, even though the loan was owned by a different entity. We had to send the check back, have a reissue from his IRA, and everybody knows how that causes a delay and issues. So just follow the process. Your purchase agreement should match the wiring instructions, and there should be no problem. So for those of you that may have heard that spiel last night, I apologize, but wouldn't hurt to hear it two or three times just to make sure everything's done. If you do have any questions regarding what we just covered, you know, don't just email Bob, email offering or trade desk, and then I'll be glad to reply and make sure everybody is in the loop and covered on that. So hopefully that covers everything. I don't know if anybody asked any questions on that, Matt, but if not, we can go to the next exciting topic.
They have not. I'm going to go ahead and do you want me to pull up the PowerPoint, or is this good?
That's good. Nobody asked questions. I'm looking at some of these people on there. Okay. A lot of people who have bought assets from us recently are on the call, so hopefully they're all clear on that. That's some good stuff. All right, good. All right. We're going to talk about a couple of events that are coming up. First one we're going to talk about is the 4th Annual Appreciation Event and Node Expo 2015. The 4th Annual Appreciation Event is November 4th and 5th, and the Node Expo is the 6th and 7th. So if you plan to attend that, all right, so Matt, you did change the PowerPoint. There you go. I was looking at it. Then it's at the Hotel Intercontinental in Dallas, and we are working on the agenda now. There will be our annual appreciation dinner and charity auction on the night of the 5th. There will be a Titanium VIP event on the night of the 4th, as long as with some sessions that afternoon as well for our entire Note School family. And then the 6th and 7th is the Note Expo. So how do you go? Well, yes, this is not something that we just made up. This is the actual URL that you type in there, okay? You type in there, tinyurl.com/annualexpo, and it will take you to the registration page. Okay, so the appreciation event is free. The Note Expo costs $249 early bird rate right now and $150 for a guest. The form you'll fill out online is actually a copy of a handwritten or a form you'd fill out by hand, but it's just like you would register at any other time. So obviously we're less than 4 months out now, so it's time to start planning everybody's attendance here. So if you guys would go to that tinyurl.com/annualexpo, and remember that's to register not only for the Note Expo, but as you can see here, register for the fourth annual appreciation event. So let's make sure you take care of that. And we look forward to seeing everybody in November in Dallas. We're super excited about it this year. We've got some new sponsors coming on board that we'll be sending emails out about. We expect this year to have between 400 and 500 people. Some exciting news, we actually went and looked at a facility for Node Expo 2016 already, so we could unveil that at this year's Expo and have all those details as well. So we've got some exciting things coming up there. So again, if anybody has any questions, you can email Angie at nodeschool.com. And Angie's kind of coordinating some of the Node Expo things. So Angie at Node Expo, no, excuse me, Angie at NodeSchool.com would be great.
And Bob,
before, yes.
So just to let everybody know, they don't have to type anything into anywhere. If they go to the same place that they can get the documents as far as the walkthrough PowerPoint, if you click on the syllabus, I've placed the hyperlink inside of this, and it'll automatically go to that page. Or they can go to the calendar of the events and go to the November portion of it, click on the day, and they'll be able to sign up there as well. So there's several different ways that they can do it if they don't feel comfortable just typing in the HTTP web link. So just sorry, Dan.
That's why you're at the master controls, Matt. Awesome. This high-tech stuff. Okay. So it's on the website. You can click on a link. You can go to the presentation, click on a link, and you can go to NodeSchool.com, and I think under live classes there's actually a link on there as well. So get registered today. For the first 10 people that register after this call, we're going to have a bonus prize, so we'll be looking forward to that. However, before November, we have a big event coming up here next month in August, and it is our first Titanium Mastermind. This is a special event for all Titanium students. It's a getaway mastermind weekend with the Big Four, Eddie, Charles, Susan, and myself. It is on August 20th through the 23rd. And it is at our Note Recovery Center in Spanish Fort, Texas, which is a few miles from Nakona, Texas, which is right up on the Red River on the Texas-Oklahoma border. I can tell by the attendee list on the webinar that several of you guys have been there before, whether it was for a previous mastermind or a hog hunt or some other charity event that we had up there. So it's a great time. The place has really come around, and it's awesome. Matt, if you'll go to the next page, let me let me kind of go through. Well, one thing at the bottom of that is you can see if you want to attend as a Titanium student, you need to RSVP by the end of this month, July 31st, for headcounts. And email my wife, Angie, at angie@nodeschool.com. And for those of you that are on the call that have been thinking about upgrading maybe to a Titanium and what, why should I, this is one of the perks Titanium students get is some private events, networking opportunities. And, of course, you get preferred pricing on assets, no processing fees, first look at assets. I've talked to several students in the last several weeks that have bought assets and told them, you know, hey, the savings that you would have if you were Titanium, you'd already pay for the upgrade with the assets that you're buying here. So we've had quite a few people upgrade over the past 2 weeks. So a little bit more details about what the mastermind is going to look like. The mastermind starts on Thursday, August 20th. At noon here at the Note School headquarters. We will make our way up to our Note Recovery Center that afternoon, and then the festivities will start when we get there with dinner and networking and the beginning of the sessions. Then we'll have two full days of activities and sessions. Prior to attending the mastermind, you'll get a whole list of things. For those of you who have never been to a mastermind, it's like it's a group meeting that's real interactive where you guys get up and present. You'll be given a time slot where you talk about, this is how I want to grow my business. And you'll get not only the input from the four of us, but you'll also get input from all the other Titanium students sharing best practices and really help you get your business to the next level. And again, it also helps you network, meet people across the country that you may be able to partner up and do a deal with, or they may be able to help you out with a deal. And then we end. First thing Sunday morning, we pack up and head back, and we get everybody back to the DFW airport around noon on Sunday. So everybody wants to know, well, when do I need to come in and what? Once you get to Note School headquarters on Thursday, then all your food and transportation is provided, and we will get you back to Dallas. You have to get to Dallas, and you have to pay for your accommodations at the Miranda Inn, and that information is on here as well. So that's what you have to do. So if you live close enough to Southlake, Texas, that you could be at our operation at Thursday at noon, then you can come in on Thursday. If you need to fly across the country, then you might want to come in Wednesday night, stay at a local hotel, and we'll come get you and bring you to the office on Thursday. And then again, just let everybody know your flight arrangements. We'll get you back to the airport around noon on Sunday. And we will transfer everybody to and from all the activities. So once you get here, it's going to be a good environment. And we'll spend a lot of fun together. It's going to be a little hot. We'll send out all this information as you guys RSVP. We'll have the agenda, your business presentation, preparation materials, some suggested attire. I'm not going to lie to you. August 20th, North Texas, probably going to be, I don't know, what do you think, Charles? Maybe you wear shorts?
You better wear shorts.
Yeah.
We'll make sure we'll hook that up. Air conditioning. Yeah, it'll be warm.
As far as the mastermind, we'll be in an air-conditioned facility, okay? So we're not going to sit outside in the tent. However, there will be some outdoor activities that we'll do during the afternoon or early evening, so it will be a little warm. We'll have barbecues and cookouts, and we'll do some. We might get out on a boat on the Red River or do some four-wheeling or whatever. So we'll have some outdoor activities, but when we buckle down and get to work, it will be in a nice air-conditioned facility at the Veranda Inn. So I don't want to scare everybody off thinking it's going to be super hot, but I don't want anybody coming in here thinking, oh, I wish I would have known it's going to be 102 degrees. Again, the RSVP deadline is coming up at the end of the month. We'd really like to see all our titanium students out here. If you have any questions, email Angie@noteschool.com. And there's a phone number for the Veranda Inn for making your reservations as well. So Susan and Charles and I have been working hard to get all these logistics in place, and I think we're getting there. So we look forward to seeing all you guys here in about 6 weeks.
So I guess y'all, Lisa said that Mr. Speed promised that they were going to go water skiing, so I didn't know if y'all had a boat set up for the Red River or not. You know, water skiing.
Is this Lisa?
Yeah.
We're going to let Lisa do that. That's just a special activity just for Lisa.
I don't have the ability to put photos up on this call, but let me just say that Lisa's already experienced the Red River. We didn't really go water skiing, but she has walked in the Red River as our ATV got stuck, and we had to bail out of it and pull it to the side. So she is definitely speaking from experience, but I will let Lisa know that the Red River is up about 30 feet compared to when you were here due to all the rain we had for the last couple months. So water skiing is a definite possibility. Maybe we'll just pull some rafts or inner tubes behind there, because I can't really stand up on water skis. I know Kevin, who we had on earlier, can do it, because I saw on Facebook he was out there tooling all around on his water skis this past weekend. So, if you have any questions, type them in the box or raise your hand. We'll be glad to answer them.
Ralph was kind of trying to figure out about when he should be flying in, and I think you answered part of that. But he was also wanting to know what kind of – is there going to be a cap to the size of the group? Is it going to be just as big as it can be, or is it going to be kind of like it's trying to keep it at a certain size?
No, we're talking about the titanium event?
Correct.
Yeah, the cap on the titanium event is you have to be a titanium student. So every titanium student we have, if they all come, we can handle it. So that'll be great. On Note Expo, there is no cap. We have all our mentor students that we can take, and Note Expo is also an industry-wide event. You can bring your friends, your colleagues, people you want to get in the note business, some capital people you want to learn more about the note business, so maybe they'll help partner up with some money of yours. So you can invite anybody in your network you want to Node Expo. Titanium Mastermind is a private event for Titanium students only.
So speaking of the Node Expo, Luke had a question about that. He was wanting to know if you could kind of elaborate on the Gold and Notes class at the end of the Node Expo.
Sure. Every year during our annual appreciation event, Node Expo, the annual appreciation event is the first 2 days. The Node Expo is a Friday and Saturday, and that's when the festivities officially end. But we have a bonus day on Sunday, which is a one-day class, usually geared towards people that are new to the Node business and new to Node School. It's a one-day class that Eddie does, so if you've seen Eddie do a one-day presentation before, it's not going to be identical because we update the material. It's a good refresher for Node School Mentor students. I think each year we usually have 40 or 50 that will stay behind and watch that. But it is geared more towards somebody who's new to the Node School family, or somebody who wants to become a mentor student in the Node School family. So I would say you'll definitely get some, you know, quote unquote golden nuggets to help you along the way. But you know, if you've been to a 1 day bonus class before, the material, there'll be some new stuff based on some, you know, market conditions and industry updates, but it is geared more towards the non-mentor students.
All right.
Let's see, we got anybody else with their hand up?
All right, please explain specifically where we will be boarding for each night of the Titanium Mastermind weekend.
Did that come from Angie?
And that came from Danny.
I'm just kidding.
You're getting that for other words.
Yeah. My wife asked me all the time, now, where exactly are we going to have to stay when we go up here? Okay, there's a place called the Veranda Inn. I think it's on the sheet here. It is a very nice, call it a hotel. It's called an inn, but it is a hotel. And it is actually in Nakona, Texas, which is about 15 miles. Miles from Spanish Fort, where the Note Recovery Center is located. It's a pretty new facility. It's got a great event center where we'll have all of our meetings. It's got a built-in catering kitchen and place to have our receptions in the morning and at night. So I don't remember exactly how many rooms it has, but we've reserved the whole thing. So there's plenty of rooms there. And also, if anybody other than Ryan Parson has an RV, has an adjacent RV lot, you can just drive your RV there and stay in that if you want. But you will be there on Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. If you come in Wednesday, you'll need to stay near our headquarters here in Southlake so that you can get to our office. So I would suggest staying somewhere close to the DFW airport. Or in Grapevine or Southlake, Texas. So Wednesday night, if you come in ahead of time, you'll stay close to the office. The other three nights, you will be at the Veranda Inn in Nakona, Texas. There's a phone number on there. I haven't done the research. I should have, but I don't know if that means they don't have a website or we just didn't put it on this invitation card. But I will definitely look into that, and by the next call, we'll let you know if there's a website, or you can go to Google and just see if there is a Veranda Inn. When you're after the call. So.
All right.
I do know that we're getting ready to talk just a little bit at the end here about social media. And for those of you that are on Facebook, other than being, what do you call it, Matt? You like something on Facebook? Is that what you do? Or your friend?
Well, sometimes you like it just so you can unlike it. But yeah.
Okay. So other than our The Note School and Colonial Funding Group, there is a Facebook page for the Note Recovery Center. And it is loaded with pictures from the various activities. So if you really know what you want to get yourself into, whether it's for the Titanium Mastermind or some of the charity events that we auction off, like the Hog Hunt, the Mastermind with Bob and Eddie, or anything like that, you can go to Note Recovery Center Facebook page. And you can see the facilities, some of the fun activities we have, like poker games, the food we cook, the networking we do and all that. So I think there's even a picture of Lisa getting pulled out of the water on there now. So I know she's probably hitting it pretty hard just trying to check it out. So go to Facebook.com, Note Recovery Center too, and check that out. And you can get a better feel for exactly what the Note Recovery Center is like. And remember, you are staying at the Veranda Inn, which is a completely different facility. So, but we want everybody to follow us on Twitter too, at Note School or at Colonial Capital Management. That's COLCAPMGMT. We do spread a lot of industry news through those outlets there. So I always post stuff about CFPB rulings, HOA lien rulings, any industry news I always put on there, as well as stuff that we have going on and things like that. Also, check your monthly byline that comes out at the beginning of each month. And that always has information on upcoming events as well as some good industry updates on what's going on. Martha put something in there about your retirement strategies. Ryan put something in there about capital funds. Eddie usually puts a few articles in there, and I'll put some stuff in there. So connect with us by making sure we follow all that, and that'll help you stay connected. All right, well, I've only seen two of you registered for Note Expo, so we got eight more gifts to give away. So if somebody would get on there and get registered, that'd be awesome. I'll go scroll down there just a little bit, Matt. Yep, there we go. I don't want you to play the video because there's no telling what it may look like. But that's just to show we really did get stuck out there in the middle of the river. So, And there we are sitting in front of the Note Recovery Center. So that was a good time. And Matt, it's always dangerous when you're on Mr. Finolio's site here to just start scrolling through stuff.
Yeah, you got the point.
So anyway, if there's no questions, we're right up against an hour here. And Charles, I guess you're enjoying your time down there in Hattiesburg.
Yeah, we got about 101 today here in Hattiesburg.
Awesome. And Matt, we appreciate you on the controls there in Denver. And Eddie will be back next week. And I know everybody will be looking forward to hearing an update from him and his travels. So again, if there's any questions on the trade desk or offerings, please email us at those addresses. Please register for the appreciation event, Note Expo, and all you Titanium students. We look forward to seeing you guys next month at the Mastermind. So, Matt, if there's not anything else, then that will do it for today.
All right. Have a good
afternoon, everybody.
All right, guys. We'll see you.